Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnson. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, photos, and video at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening, Mr. Andy Ulrich. Andy, how's it going?
Good. Been an interesting week. And we're going to talk about some things later, but, you know...
It has been an interesting week. At some point or another, and I'm sure as I play with the microphone and just completely destroy it, I'm sure we're going to get to it at some point. There was the shooting up at the Beaver Creek Walmart that, oddly enough, Andy and I disagree, which doesn't happen too often. Usually we fall pretty in line with one another about things like this. Oh, also, too, before I forget, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. We'll probably dedicate an entire show to this. I'd like to do some more research before I very publicly air my opinion on that. But I think it should be interesting. That for those that did not see, someone that ended up being unarmed was shot and killed by the police up there after a 911 caller lied. I mean, honestly. And I don't generally wish bad things on people, but that guy, ooh. Wish he'd be in jail. Oh, wait, am I sharing my opinion on this right now? We were going to wait, weren't we?
I will wait to share my opinion.
Okay, that's good. Not only that, but a woman that was in the store died in the parking lot of a heart attack afterwards. Yep. So, two dead people because someone... anyway, I won't go there right now. Tonight we're going to talk with Lieutenant Chuck Haggard from the Topeka, Kansas Police Department about sighted versus unsighted fire in shootings, and he was actually in charge of their firearms program for about 3 years, had over an 80% hit rate. I also want to talk about Corporal Jason Harwood at the end of the show, who was murdered a few Sundays ago. Actually, Chuck was supposed to be on the show and had to go in and deal with that. It happened about 45 minutes before we were supposed to go on the air, but they're raising money for his family, and I would like to encourage all of you to help with that. And Ballistic Radio is going to try and do some things as well. Quick update, the Knights Armament Test Rifle. We're sitting around 3,700 or 3,800 rounds right now. No cleanings, no failures. I'm very impressed. Highest round count in one day so far has been 1,100 consecutive rounds, which got the gun pretty hot. Still working well. Got the FN test gun back from Boresight Solutions down in Florida. And it looks very nice and feels even better. We're going to start dumping some rounds through that, too. And I swear I will write articles about these guns. But anyway, let's get Chuck on the air, and we will kind of get going with tonight's show. So joining us, Chuck Haggard. Chuck, how are you doing?
Doing okay.
So I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. And you just got done with a class, didn't you?
I'm sorry?
You just got done with a class, didn't you? I interrupted your drive home.
Actually, very shortly, I'm sitting on the range at Midwest Defense Facility near Wambego, Kansas, as we speak.
Nice, nice. Did you tell everyone, oh, yeah, I got to go talk to this jerk that's got a radio show? So.
Actually, we were doing an AAR of the class, and I said, I got to take a call. I got an interview.
No, that's great. So for those that don't know, do you mind sharing your background just a little bit, Chuck?
28 years currently in law enforcement. I had some military time with the National Guard, but primary my firearms training and experience has been law enforcement related. Grew up shooting. My dad was a career Army Camp Perry shooter. And then after I got into law enforcement, I got heavily into handgun shooting, thinking that might be an important thing for me to know.
Yes, just a little.
I'm a firearms instructor for my department and for some entities on the side, low-light instructor, specialized in active shooter. I was a SWAT team member for 18 years. Our team was active enough that I've got over 2,000 entries in that time that I can document.
Nice.
Anyway, I'm a kind of a training whore, so I do a lot of that. Do a lot of shooting. Get as much training outside of my department as I can, as I can afford to take.
Well, there you go. And I can certainly appreciate that, since I seem to spend a lot of time at classes myself. I spend so much time at classes, I apparently get certificates emailed to me for classes I don't even remember taking. But that's a funny story. I'll tell you about that off the air, Chuck. So I guess tonight what we're going to talk about, and this was going to be the topic of the original show when unfortunately we had that stuff go on that you were unable to make it. And I do want to talk about that at the end of the show. But sure. There seems to be quite a bit of discussion as to whether or not you will have time to use your sights if you are involved in a shooting. Now, the reason why I thought it would be nice to talk to you is not only were you in charge of the program at your department for, I want to say, what, 3 years? And you had over an 80% hit rate with the officer-involved shootings of the guys under your mm-hmm. command. But you were also a student of Jim Cirillo's, who had quite a few shootings himself.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got about 2.5 minutes left. We're talking with Lieutenant Chuck Haggard. What's your official stance on the whether or not you should use your sights if involved in a self-defense shooting? Without cursing.
In any time that you can get your sights on target, you're not in a retention shooting situation so close that you can touch the person or they can touch you. I'm a firm believer that you should be getting your sights on target. And, of course, it may be a crude sight picture or a more fine sight picture that is called for, but consistently in what I have seen locally, research I've done and talking to people who have been involved in training, been involved in shootings, been involved in training people who have been in shootings, is that the people who are really successful are the people who are cognizant of getting their sights on the target and making those hits.
Right.
Just getting a hit in a fight is a really big deal. And being able to do that accurately and getting effective hits on target is what ends fights quickly.
Well, and that seems to be something else, too, that one of the things that gets thrown around, and actually a friend of mine is one of the people that throws it around, and I won't name any names, but anyone that is in the Krav Maga will know who I'm... Oh, wait. No, he's not into that either. Combat effective hits, or combat accuracy. Handguns don't really do that well against people most of the time unless someone gets lucky or they place a shot really well, correct?
And that's true. Pistol bullets are notoriously ineffective. One of the things that I also teach our officers, I have been to Dr. James Williams, Doc Williams' tactical anatomy course. I wish he was more active in teaching that nowadays as he used to be, but when you look at what a vital zone on a human being is, you really start to realize how small a target we're talking about.
Right.
That there's large parts of the human body that you can shoot, and a lot of times people don't care that the bullet will pass through non-vital tissue, non-vital organs, and have no effect,
right.
No effect whatsoever. If somebody's doped up or they just got a hardcore mindset,
yeah, or even getting them to notice they've been shot in the first place, which can sometimes be problematic. So I'm told. Now we've actually got to go to break. Okay. Tonight's show, we're talking about whether or not you should use your sights, and you should, but we're going to tell you why. Talking about that with Chuck Haggard from the Topeka, Kansas Police Department. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Fire finishes so tough, you need dynamite to get them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. Grip it, love it, get it, the tough Walther PPX. Then get $100 worth of PPX accessories free. The PPX is Walther's tough workhorse pistol at a value price. Now get an extra magazine, polymer holster, and dual magazine pouch free with the purchase of new Walther PPX at participating dealers. Grip the famous ergonomic handle and you'll love it. Shoot it and feel the difference. The Walther PPX, grip it, love it, get it now. Offer good with $9.95 shipping and handling. So tonight we are talking with Lieutenant Chuck Haggard from the Topeka, Kansas Police Department about whether or not you should use your sights in a gunfight. Chuck, are you still there?
I am.
Perfect. And it's interesting because this is like one of those topics that comes up a lot. online, which is my favorite place to hang out. And honestly, if you people enjoy the show, the Facebook page is a wonderful place to see what happens when I don't have the FCC to deal with. For instance, I just posted a photo reply to I don't know if you followed any of that conversation, Chuck, where people were telling me that you couldn't run a carbine one-handed effectively.
I saw your video, but it didn't. I had no idea what that was referenced. I figured it was some derpness.
Yeah, it was. But my favorite, when I was down in Georgia, I did a photo shoot with Site Picture Media, who are actually some really good guys. And one of the outtakes from it, you'd have to go on the Facebook page to see it, but I'm making an obscene gesture with my left hand while running the carbine with my right hand. So things that happen in Georgia, I don't know. I guess they stay down there. Anyway, so we were talking about before the show that, excuse me, we were talking about before the last break how handgun rounds are not really that effective unless you hit someone in a very specific place. Where do you think the myth comes into play as far as, well, you don't have time to use your sights? Because, you know, as you stated, a lot of the people you talk to that have done really well in gunfights have distinct memories of using their sights or have trained in such a way that it's pretty impossible that they didn't. I mean, Jared Reston's a great example. He's had 4 shootings now, used his sights all 4 times. I mean, what do you think is the impetus behind the myth that you don't?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I have to think that some of our firearms lore comes from popular media. And if you go, you know, like when I was a kid, Western movies were really big. And throughout the time that like, my dad was a kid or you know, a young adult, and all those guys shot from the hip. The thought is, you might remember Todd Green wrote an article that said, "Feelings lie."
Yeah.
People try to shop for a gun and pick it by feel. Well, this one feels good in my hand. It's meaningless. It's absolutely meaningless.
Yeah.
But a lot of people will draw, fire from the hip, and it feels fast.
Mm-hmm.
They're not on a timer. What's a timer say? The timer does not lie.
No.
The target does not lie. And I see a lot of people that profess. I was in an online thing with a gentleman that was down in Texas, and he was a big revolver guy and old school, and I mean that in a bad way because there's a good way, but
yeah,
he was doing point shooting because, you know, that's what Bill Jordan did, and did a video of his shooting, and he had 3 targets, and he marginally hit all of them in you know, what I thought it was a pretty exorbitant of an amount of time, whereas in any, you know, Old school Jeff Cooper El Prez is 6 shots, reload 6 shots with a pivot, all A-zone hits at 10 yards in less than 10 seconds.
Right.
That's using your sights. You can't do that without your sights. So I think it's a my theory is part of it's popular culture, Western movie influence. There are people, if you default under duress to your level of training, and your level of training sucks, then you may not, you know, it's natural to focus on your target instead of your sights. But the entire idea that you can instinctively shoot is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Humans do very few things instinctively. I'll just skip right over that because one of the few, there's few things that they do instinctively. Holding what is basically a pipe bomb at arm's length and then touching it off with a small explosion in front of your face is not instinctive.
No.
That's the type of thing we have to train ourselves to do. I'll submit that landing a jet aircraft on an aircraft carrier is not instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very exciting event, and you have to have a lot of skills going all at the same time in order to be able to pull that off and not end up in the water or pancaked onto the ship.
Right, right.
Nobody argues that aircraft carrier pilots don't successfully land on aircraft carriers. When we extrapolate all these human performance measures, the people who are pushing unsighted fire as instinctive or, you know, sighted fire is impossible, they're either using junk science or just bad training, in my opinion.
Right. Well, now, bad training, that doesn't exist anywhere. What are you talking about, Chuck?
Right.
You know, it it's interesting to me only because, you know, and I think that a lot of the confusion too is that I've seen a lot of interviews where, and they've got video of these shootings. Well, do you remember using your sights? Nope, sure don't. But then you watch the video and they've got the gun up in the eye line, and it's pretty clear that if they're not, you know, they might not be having a hard front sight focus, but they're clearly seeing the sights at somewhere in their line of vision, which I don't know. I think that it kind of comes back to the, you know, memories lie too, I guess. It's interesting to me that in 2014, this is still a topic of conversation, though, whether or not you should use your sights. I don't understand it.
Well, there's still people using junk science that's been shot down years ago.
Right.
You're talking about not wanting to name names, but I have to throw out one of the things that keeps popping up is information out of the book Sharpening a Warrior's Edge by Bruce Siddle. And they talk about that, you know, people biomechanically, that you physically cannot see your front sight under stress because of this change and that change, you know, because under fight or flight adrenaline dump, and it's a lot more complex than adrenaline. You got enkephalins and endorphins and just this whole cocktail of hormones that hit your system when you're under fight or flight response. But he'll, you know, in the book they talk about, well, if your heart rate's this, then, you know, you're going to lose fine motor skills and yada, yada, yada. It's all of that has been disputed. Yet I still see in police and military training circles people utilizing that book as though it's the Bible, when it's clearly been discredited as just bad science.
Right.
I suppose that a big chunk of this is human nature, that these things keep popping back up. You talk about memory. We know in police work that eyewitnesses are notoriously poor at recollecting events quite often.
Right.
I know a man who, during the course of a SWAT entry, the SHIELD guy was shot, suspect was barricaded. He emptied a magazine out of his MP5, reloaded and emptied half a magazine, shot the suspect, but all he can remember out of the deal was being very frustrated and not being able to get a hold of the grab handle on the back of the point man's vest to drag him out of the line of fire because the drag handle was Velcroed down.
Right.
Gloves, you know, tack gloves, you don't have a lot of tactile feel. No memory of firing his MP5, but he had done that so many times that went into autopilot, and his cognitive thoughts were tied up on this other problem.
Right.
Jim Strangarillo told me in personal conversation that he believed that very highly trained shooters will get as much of a sight picture as they need to make the shot that they are faced with, and often they are shooting subliminally while the mind, the conscious mind, is handling other problems.
Yeah. Well, you know, the personal experience I have with that, I can go a couple different directions here, but, you know, the last, and I'll do rabbit ears around this, self-defense shooting that I was involved in was with a dog, and I didn't even need to shoot the dog. That's not the point. But the point is I did fire a round, and I distinctly remember having a perfect sight picture, saw the orange circle on the Trijicon HD perfectly, even remember the serrations on the rear sight. And I mean, when I shoot regularly, I don't see the sight that way. So it was interesting to me, you know. And then, like, the other side of that is, you know, I run the fast drill pretty regularly, and we've talked about this. You know, and I finally got under 4 seconds, which, if, you know, you rightly don't care that much about the fast drill. Anyone listening, under 5 is considered fast, under 4 is pretty quick too. But my thought process during that is never the first 2 shots. It's always not messing up the reload. That's the part that I have to think about. You know, so it's interesting that you bring up the, you know, what does our mind focus on during the process? And, you know, Jim Cirillo was involved in how many shootings? Like over 10, right?
19 officially.
Yeah. Officially. So, and he, I want to say, because I'd read his book, and it's not popping into my head right this second, but he used his sights on almost all of those, I want to say.
Well, he told me, and he wrote in his book, that not only could he see his front sight, but that he could see the striations on his front sight, and the front sight on his Model 10 in his first shooting had a nick on it. He could distinctly see the striations on the front sight and the nick on his front sight as he was shooting.
Yeah.
In fact, he almost had an out-of-body experience. His unconscious mind was doing what needed to happen in order to make the shots that, right. that he took, which was three bad guys. One of them was two headshots to put him down, and then two other bad guys that he shot multiple times with the clerk in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically a three-suspect hostage rescue shooting.
Right.
And at first, he was handling the problem, and consciously, he thought to himself, who is shooting my gun? Because that was his first deadly force incident that he had had. And so it was a little unnerving for him.
Right.
He
now, let me interrupt just real quick, Chuck, yeah. because we got to go to break, but I want to hear the rest of that story. Right now, we're talking with Chuck Haggard. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. Presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. Makers of fires finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitor shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So this evening we are talking with Lieutenant Chuck Haggard from the Topeka, Kansas Police Department. And Eric was just playing some brand-new Slipknot. And I know that Chuck and Andy are both looking forward to that album coming out. But, well, wait, maybe I'm looking forward to it, and Chuck and Andy are like, Slipknot.
That's... I'm going to pay him to put some country music on just to tick you off.
It's not going to tick me off. I like music. So, besides, he does what I say, not what you say. Anyway, back to Chuck. So, are you still there, Chuck, or did I make you hang up?
I am.
Okay, good.
I'm here.
All right. So, we were talking about Jim Cirillo's first officer-involved shooting, hostage rescue shot with three bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
So... Please continue.
Well, he verbally challenged them, didn't want it to turn into a shooting. And then, of course, they opened fire first. He was returning fire, and two of the bad guys were trying to take cover behind the clerk who failed to follow instructions. She vapor locked and just stood there instead of hitting the deck. So,
yeah.
You know, in that famous fight, in Reconstruction, they estimated that he shot all three bad guys within about a second and a half, a second and three quarter. One of them fatally with two headshots, and then the other two with the rounds that he had left in his Model 10. Those guys decided they had an urgent appointment at the doctor's office at that point and took off.
Right.
But he had 100% hits, no friendlies hit, and you know, vividly remembers his front sight. You know, you and I were talking about the memory thing the last time I had to pull a trigger on duty. I fired my M4 carbine twice, and we know those are very loud devices.
Mm-hmm.
I have absolutely no memory of my gun going off whatsoever.
Right.
And then afterwards, obviously, I had to take my safety off. I'm a big safety on type guy. I had to take my safety off to fire those shots. I looked down to check my carbine, and my safety was back on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like magic, you know.
Well, that was it, too, actually. With the dog, you know, I was... had a SIG 226 at that point, and I managed to reholster appendix, I might say, no less, without shooting myself, which I know is a big... Well, after shooting, you don't want to carry appendix because you'll put a round in your... I didn't. But I had to cock the pistol. I have no memory of that. I don't even remember reholstering either. It was funny. You know, and auditory exclusion is a real thing, too. I know some people will argue that, but it's you don't tend to hear shots that you didn't expect to fire. You know, I tell you what I meant to ask Dan Papale, who was on last weekend, but he made, and I know he used his sights because there's no way he didn't, but he ran a perfect failure drill on that active shooter. He put two in the guy's chest and then one through his eye, you know, mm-hmm. after he had taken cover behind a hostage at 22 yards, you know. So, and I meant to ask him whether or not he remembered seeing it, but I know he used them because there's, once again, you don't do something like that without aiming.
Yeah.
I mean, What do you think that, how do we instill that in people? Is that just where whenever you're shooting, you're on your sights? You just don't accept that you're not going to use them, except for very small scenarios?
I think that is definitely a training issue. And then the human performance factor is everybody, quite frankly, I found like in police recruit training, if some people we wash out. We do heavy simulations in our academy, and one of the things we check is do we have people who are going to panic. We had a young lady one time in our academy that we ended up washing out of our academy because every time we had a use of force event, she killed everybody.
That's not good.
Everybody all the time. Well, obviously, that's not acceptable behavior. So, I mean, it's a point of fact that, you know, not everybody can do everything. I'm not a brain surgeon for a reason. I'm not a, you know, F-18 pilot probably for a reason.
Right.
We have a wide range of human skills. Not everybody can do everything, but what we do find is that the vast majority of people within the norm of the bell curve, you know, we find like in Tom Gibbons' most excellent civilian concealed carry database that even people with minimal training, when they learn to get two hands on the gun, get sights on target, and break the shot, they successfully do so.
Right.
His students have a higher than 90% hit rate in very real citizen defense shootings.
Yeah.
One of the most profound is the lady that he has talked about several times in debriefs is from Thailand.
Yeah.
So she's got no previous training, comes from a culture that is not a gun culture. You might get executed by the military if you're a civilian caught with a gun.
Right.
So now she's a shop owner in the United States and has a very successful self-defense shooting in her shop that's captured on video, so we know exactly what she did. Pulled the gun, two hands on it, eye level, aimed in the front sight, and hit this guy center mass and folded him up.
Yep.
Training, it works if you let it work.
Well, she did the sidestep right out of the bad guy's line of sight on that.
Absolutely.
Too, which is something else that people argue as to whether or not that is something you should be doing. Once again, contextually, but here's something. What do you think of the? And I know we didn't talk about this at all beforehand, but what do you think of the sidestep on the reload that some people profess as a good idea?
Kind of depends. I mean, are you stuck in a hallway?
Yeah.
I would suggest that, like Paul Howell, he's not a big fan of shooting on the move. He believes you should be at a dead run or you should be shooting people. And in a combat, infantry combat scenario, he found that shooting on the move just didn't make any sense.
Right.
You go to apply, you know, am I in a parking lot with a parked car 3 feet away from me? And I shoot to slide lock. Should I, like, probably get behind the car, maybe? That would make a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you know as well as I do, what the Army maxim is, terrain dictates.
Yep.
I think it's the application to the situation you presently have at hand that's problematic.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I ask is because I've been to a couple different places now where I'll see someone practicing that. And they practice it on every single reload, and it's—I don't know—it's intriguing to me just to see what people do and what people don't do. And I guess I understand why that happens, as far as, well, I want to get good at repping this skill or whatever. But I think that the thing that you tend to see at that point is you do it when you don't need to. I don't know; it's just my opinion for what that's worth.
Movement when you like drawing. Like I teach my guys to move on the draw typically, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
When things go bad, almost nobody stands still.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these psychomotor skills that we teach, shooting, drawing pistols, reducing malfunctions, reloads, are more complex moving, and that people who can do that more complex skill are certainly able to do so while standing still.
Yeah.
So it just for that aspect, it might have good training value.
Right. That's another thing, too. It's I was talking with John Hearn at the Polypalooza event that we were both at,
mm-hmm.
and we were having the conversation as for civilians at least, you know, whether or not they should move to cover or whether or not they should just draw a gun and shoot someone, because I was having that conversation online with someone, and as John and I came up with the other John. Wait, this is turning very Archer-esque. other Barry? No. As we both came up with, though, it's generally quicker to generally quicker to kill someone than it is to move out of the way and then try and do it. But that's a point of contention that I have anyway. As far as when people are at the range and they're trying to get better at this or trying to practice applicable skills, just drawing the gun up to eye level and doing the press out over and over and over again to the point where it's second nature. What do you suggest?
The two things that I see falling apart most often here, I think your most perishable handgun skills, first is trigger control. Mm-hmm. That's the most perishable skill, and I think most people fall down on that with insufficient dry fire. Second one is tracking the sights being able to get that sight picture, get it up on target, and break that shot. What I consistently see in students is the trigger control is what goes out the window first. Mm-hmm. If they don't practice or they don't keep up on that skill, that's the toughest thing to teach a basic student, and it's the first thing they lose.
Right.
From what I see in police action shootings, things that are on car camera videos, things like that, obviously the gun's up in the eye sight line, and then the officer will tank the trigger as hard as possible and go cyclic.
Right.
And to shoot absolutely as fast as they possibly can. That's kind of a panic response.
Right.
And it's ineffective. It's not a good way to do business.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned trigger control. We got about a minute and then we have to go back to break. Obviously with what I get to do, I get to talk to a lot of new shooters. And oddly enough, I get a lot of new shooters that will show me targets. And, if you've been shooting for a while, and I'm not talking about like those diagnostic targets because I think those are dumb. But if you've been around it a little bit, you can generally see when someone is making mistakes with the trigger. And the thing I always tell them is, well, you need to dry fire more. And they're like, will that help? Well, yeah, it will. It's not fun if you don't like it, but it'll certainly help a lot. We got 20 seconds in this segment left. Is that just pretty much it? Dry fire and practice picking up your sights?
Yeah, I think professional instruction and learning correctly from the get-go is super helpful.
Yeah.
There's too many guys that learn from Uncle Bubba and had ingrained bad habits. Then you got to unlearn them to get the correct ones.
Right. Well, hey, we'll talk about it a little bit more. Right now we're talking with Chuck Haggard. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group. Makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. Eric, you're picking good tunes tonight, man. I appreciate that. Actually, remember when that music video came out? It's been a long time ago. Wow. Anyway, talking with Chuck Haggard. Chuck, are you still there?
I am.
Excellent. So we've established that you should use your sights, you should go to training, and you should probably dry fire more than you do because that's a good thing. I think that's what we've covered so far tonight.
Sure.
All right. I kind of want to switch topics a little bit. You were supposed to come on the show. I want to say that's been 3 weeks ago now. You would probably remember much more clearly than I would. Actually had one of your officers murdered. You had to go in and deal with that.
Yes.
I'd been talking about it before the show a little bit, and I'd asked if there was anything we could do or not, and you were going to get back to me. But something I did decide to do, and I'll let you know now. Early fans of the show will probably remember that we did a T-shirt drive for Robin Hopkins when she was shot. Actually going to do the same thing, probably the same shirts. People seem to like that one a lot. The original Ballistic Radio, it's got electrolyte shirt. I will be putting that back up for sale probably tomorrow or Tuesday, and we're going to donate 100% of the profits from that to Jason's family. So is there anything else that people can do if they want to help out? I mean, if they don't want to buy a stupid radio show T-shirt, which I don't blame people if they don't, what can they do?
We've got two funds set up for Jason's family. He had a wife, two young sons. They're both elementary school age. So as you can imagine, it's quite a shock to their family. We have a fund set up at the Topeka Police Department Credit Union, and Core First Bank, which is one of our local banks in Topeka, has also set up a fund that people can donate money to, that 100% of that goes to either one. It goes to the family expenses, education fund for the boys, things like that.
Right.
But again, Topeka Police Department Credit Union, they're online. I mean, you can look them up.
Okay.
We don't have anything set up that, you know, I know there's ways to do things with PayPal or, you know, some of the other online things or something like that.
Right.
I'm not aware that we have any of that set up. But certainly both those funds are available through Corpus Bank or through Topeka Police Department Credit Union.
All right. Well, and if there's not an online option for those two, people will obviously be able to get the shirt online. I'll post a link to that when that goes up. So just the other thing that I will do, too, I did this last time. For every shirt bought, I will donate a dollar on top of whatever the proceeds are, up to $1,000. So if we sell 1,000 T-shirts, all the profits from that will go, as well as $1,000 from us. You know, so hopefully that will be slightly helpful. I know it's not going to be enough, but most I can come up to do with right now. As far as we'll kind of go back onto the topic of the show just a little bit. As far as, and you mentioned too, not getting training from Uncle Bubba. Do you think the exposure that people get to firearms, as far as in pop culture and also to just well-meaning but uninformed people, is what sort of puts these negative training things in place?
It certainly can be. I think people, because of the they get habituated to what they repeatedly see.
Yeah.
I can't help but think that some of those things are what people are watching on TV. Like, if I don't teach an officer how to work a corner correctly, say on a building search, you will see the back to the doorway, full Sabrina, peek around the door, silly ass TV thing.
Right.
And, you know, all the TV people are worried about, or movie posters or whatnot, is you got the hero's face, you got a gun in the picture.
Right.
So how do you do that? You hold the gun
right.
poorly.
Right.
And I will see people emulate that because they don't know what else to do, or it just comes unconsciously from having seen it way too many times.
Right.
I have to think that there has to be some sort of training effect involved with that.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because I was having a conversation with Kyle DeFore on the show, actually. And he was was talking about when he was overseas and he was noticing insurgents, they'd get hit and they wouldn't act the way that he expected them to act, based off of like how other people he had seen shot acted. And he came up with it was a cultural thing. They just didn't know, so they didn't act that way. Which is intriguing, really, to kind of see the ways in which popular culture influences us, even beyond our own knowledge.
Right.
So,
You got to think some of those guys have had a much harder life than
yes,
like American citizen has.
Yeah.
You know, they might be used to taking hard licks.
Yeah, generally. Now, some else too. You'd mentioned that. You do some training on the side. You're actually starting your own training company up here soon, aren't you?
I am working on that.
Have we come up with an official name for that? I mean, I know I had my suggestions, but I can't repeat them on air. And you didn't seem like you were too keen on that. So do you have an official title, or are you still kicking that around?
Well, I don't have it registered yet.
Okay.
I'll hang on to it at this point.
Okay.
I have a friend that tells me to get that done because there are people who do things like grab up domain names when they think other people might want them, and then charge you $50 billion something that you can buy on GoDaddy for, you know, $13.
I got a funny story about that, and it's completely, you know what I'm going to talk
about.
I know
what you're talking about.
There was a local political thing that happened, and they started this terrible tax revenue generating thing, and announced it like 7 months in advance. Didn't bother to register the domain name. So the people, and one of them I'm friends with, and I thought it was hilarious. that were opposed to this new tax increase registered the domain name and used it as the campaign for not getting it passed. So it was actually, yes, you probably want to register that before you tell everyone what it is.
Sure.
But I don't know. And I wanted to, real quick, too, and do you happen to know how many officer-involved shootings you had in the 3 years that you were in charge of the program?
Exactly? I'm not sure.
Roundabout, since we got a couple minutes left.
Well, I know I had a period of time. I had one period of time where we had nine. It was extraordinarily busy, and we had nine of them in 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that throughout those nine shootings, we had 100% hits.
Huh. And for those that don't know, that's incredibly accurate shooting for a police department. So, I mean, and just that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on and talk about this was because obviously you're teaching something the right way when you're teaching it. So, I mean, anything else you want to say before the end of the show? We got another minute or so left. Any bits of Chuck wisdom you want to impart?
I wouldn't even know where to go with that at this point. I think we've kind of made the point. I think the validity of the training and the effect, the results on the street in real life bear this out. When you got a number of people from diverging backgrounds, let's say Kyle Lamb, Jim Cirillo, that are saying the same thing and seeing the same results, and those results are very successful. You have to think that the answer is in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, and that's it. Hey, Chuck, I appreciate you coming on tonight, man. I'll be in touch. So you enjoy the rest of your day, and I will talk to you later. Be safe.
Thanks. You too.
So next week I think we'll talk about the Beaver Creek shooting.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will. I might actually try and get... I know a retired police officer from out there. I might invite him on the show. We'll see. Anyway, thanks for listening this week. Remember, check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ballisticradio. Everybody be safe and see you next week.